Happy Pride Month and welcome to Out in the Bay Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beal. This week, we learn about the
San Francisco Track and Field Club,
founded by gay decathlete Tom Waddell 40 years ago. Right around the time of the first gay games, this track and field group still meets regularly, and they're hosting a Pride event of their own on June 18th at San Francisco State.
Oh, I think that there's going to be a lot of really good people running really fast.
We'll unpack 40 years of memories and preview a summer afternoon of competition at the 14th annual Pride Meet. Plus, reporter Lisenne Mendel with an investigation into how and why the singular they went from fringe to forefront in less than a decade.
There's a lot of strong linguistic evidence that singular they was already undergoing significant changes that made it more available for non-binary people to use.
That's today, Out in the Bay.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Hi, I'm Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Very nice to meet you, Rick.
Likewise.
This is Rick Toman. He's an early member of the San Francisco Track and Field Club. They're celebrating their 40th year, and he's run track and field for as long as he can remember.
I used to do the 400, the 200, the 100. Then as I got older, I dropped the 400 and went down to just the 2 and the 1. But now my knees are gone, so I'm switching over to throwing. Now I'm doing shot put, javelin, and discus. Not very well, but I'm still doing it.
Can I ask how old you are?
Just had a birthday, and I am now 69.
69 and crushing it in track and field. Look at you.
Well, I ran track and field in junior high, high school, junior college, college. And then once I graduated, there was nothing else to do. So I didn't run anymore until I came across Tom Waddell down in the Castro one day. He had a little ironing board out and was recruiting people to participate in the gay Olympics. The only gay sports around at the time was softball, bowling, and I think billiards. And of course, the front runners had an organization going. Tom, being a decathlete at the Mexico City Olympics, helped organize our track team for the first gay games. So I signed up for the gay Olympics.
Tom Waddell was an icon here in San Francisco. There's even an alley named for him behind the San Francisco Health Department. He was a doctor, a veteran, and a gay man.
Tom was like an inspiration.
In 1981, Waddell created the Gay Olympics and began recruiting people to play.
To hang out with an Olympic athlete and train with one and have him organize this event that I think has really changed the lives of a lot of people. It was really amazing what he accomplished in the time that he had.
Then a lawsuit was filed in 1982.
The U.S. Olympic Committee decided to sue Tom Waddell for the use of the word Olympics. They evidently had what they thought was a trademark on the word Olympics. We took him to the Supreme Court, I believe, and lost the case. So we had to change, at the last minute, we had to change the name to the Gay Games.
Thankfully, the litigation didn't slow the progress of the gay games, and the games, which are now dedicated to Waddell, occur every 4 years.
The first gay games was really small. Today, they're like very, very big, major sponsors and stuff, but it was mainly a community event in 82. The Castro community, the businesses there were supporting the games, just like the bars used to support the softball teams. And there was a restaurant in the Castro that if you won a medal at the first games and you showed a medal to your server or whoever, you get a free meal. And people that were lined up to get into the restaurant, as people left, they would give their medal to somebody in line so that they could also get a free meal. So that was kind of funny.
Did that restaurant survive that?
Yeah.
I was waiting for the punchline to be, and that was their final weekend in business.
after the Gay Games, there were sports groups forming for every sport. Our team banded together and we formed the San Francisco Track and Field Club, which is this year celebrating their 40th anniversary. And that's what came out of the Gay Games. We were able to kind of bring gay athletes out of the closet and show people that we were both gay and athletic.
Rick is preparing to compete on June 18th at the 14th annual Pride Meet at San Francisco State University, and so is
Alice Smith. I am part of the Pride Meet committee. We're trying to get it to be this spectacular event because it's our 40th anniversary for San Francisco track and field team.
Are you a track athlete?
I started about a year and a half ago, I guess.
What sport do you play?
I started, in high school, I did almost all of them. We had volleyball and basketball and softball, but I got a little too old, I thought, and a little too slow, I thought.
Are you doing track stuff for the meet this year or just working behind the scenes?
No, I'm doing shot put, discus, javelin, and we're going to try the hammer, but we'll see how it works out.
Oh my gosh, you're throwing heavy stuff. I love it.
Oh yeah.
I'm excited to see how you do. What specifically does San Francisco Track and Field do these days? Like, what does the organization do?
We run track and field for anybody and everybody that wants to. We have track coaches. We have long distance. We have sprinter coaches. And we have field coaches for about 6 months of the year.
So you're getting access to people that can actually help you improve as well. It's not just a recreational thing.
Right. And a lot of them are coaches that are already in the college system. Our field coach, Nate, was an Olympic athlete.
Oh, wow. What would you say the impact that you've observed has been on the folks that participate in Pride Meet over these last 14 years? Like, what has the impact on their lives been?
It keeps us as a community together, and it also keeps us mobile. There's a lot of people that just sit around, and all of us just keep moving and having a good time at it, too.
What do you do in your spare time besides track and field? Like, you live in San Francisco, you're retired.
Well, obviously, I have a lot of music.
Yeah, your apartment is, like, filled with music. Do you know how many, like, albums are represented here?
I had, over 2,000 vinyl record albums. I probably have that many... I don't think I have that many CDs now. But, yeah, I have a lot of music. It's a big part of my life.
Do you have a favorite LGBTQ artist?
Probably Sylvester. Sylvester used to live up in this area, so it was nice running into him every once in a while. Running down the street in his chiffon robe, chasing his little chihuahua. He didn't have that star personality where, you know, he couldn't talk to the common person. You'd see him shopping in the drugstore, Safeway or somewhere, and he'd say hello to you. His music just is a lot of fun, and it really got you moving.
Did you like to dance back in those days?
Oh, yeah. Well, back in the 80s and or 70s even, tea dance at the I-Beam on Sundays, that was like a ritual to go to.
Where was I-Beam at?
On Haight Street.
No longer there, right?
No.
As the San Francisco Track and Field Club, founded by Tom Waddell, prepares to celebrate its 40th year, the 14th annual Pride Meet is coming up on June 18th at San Francisco State. More with Rick and Alice next, out in the Bay. I'm not sure if you knew this, but Out in the Bay is a completely independent, listener-supported production. We don't get any money from NPR, from the radio stations that play Out in the Bay, or from podcast platforms. We rely on listener support from individual donors like you. You can log on to our website, outinthebay.org, and make a tax-deductible donation. It'll help keep the lights on here and help us keep bringing queer air to your ears. Thanks in advance for your donation. There's no time like Pride Month. That's outinthebay.org. This is Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beale. I've never competed in track, and it's a good thing, too. I can imagine it would not be called competing if I did it. But I'm learning that that's not really the point. Like, in track and field, you compete not really with the other people on the track, but with yourself. Stretching to improve your times and push your physical abilities to the max. At the Pride meet on June 18th at San Francisco State University, hundreds of athletes will try their best to focus and push themselves with pride. Rick Toman and Alice Smith again.
When you're getting ready to throw, you're thinking on some part of your technique that you need to work on.
I'm trying to think about what I have to do mechanically, and then I try to keep focused on that. It's kind of hard sometimes because my teammates they look crazy. We have a really good time.
There's just a whole bunch of technique things that go through my mind when I go to throw.
I do the best I can, and I'm going to do the best I can, and that's where I'm at.
And I'm not very good at it, but I'm getting better.
If I win a medal, great. If I don't, I'm still having a great time with my teammates.
We lost a lot of really good athletes during the AIDS crisis, so I'm amazed that I made it for 40 years. And I think back on other individuals that were teammates and friends of mine that are no longer here, would they still be competing? And sometimes I'm like, in their memory, I need to keep going for them. Certainly going into competition and signing up to compete again, your memories come back.
What has this club meant to your life in the time since you've joined it? Like, why still do this all these years later?
For me, it provides a focus to continue training, working out, staying in shape, but it's also a social conduit for me.
I think that's really important, honestly, the social part.
Yeah, and it helps me stay active, and it helps me with my interpersonal relationships. The old phrase that you can't choose your family, but you can choose your friends. These athletes that I get to work out with and compete with, they're really like family to me. And there's a lot of people on the team that I really treasure, and I'm really glad that I know them and I get to be on the team with them. You work out as much as you want to work out. If you don't want to compete, you don't compete. If you just want to stay in shape and enjoy the camaraderie of the team, that's fine with us. But we also have fun while we're working out. That's a big thing for me, is that the atmosphere is really relaxed.
Alice, I'm doing in-stadium announcements at the Pride meet.
I know.
I'm honestly a little nervous. I'm glad you're excited. This is going to be my first track meet since, like, high school. So this question's just as much for me as our listeners, but what can people expect as a spectator or a participant on the 18th at Cox Stadium?
Oh, I think that there's going to be a lot of really good people running really fast. And maybe it's their fast, not really fast.
Sure, yeah.
And we're going to have all a good time. We're going to have a halftime show just to show the history and see what's going on and how it has how it has gone up through the years. I believe there's also some gay games, shirts and stuff like that, that are going to show the history of the club throughout the whole 40 years.
So the Pride meet's coming up. It's the 18th. Are you excited?
I'm more nervous than I am excited. I get nervous probably before every meet, wondering, have I worked out enough? I mean, after 40 years, I've done enough track meets that it's just one more, but it's also, you're testing yourself to make sure that you've done all you can to be prepared to compete. We used to have a guy on the team that his philosophy was, you're only as good as your last competition, and you always want to try and be better.
What's the measure of success for you then, as you prepare?
The gay games are based on participation, not on winning a medal or anything, although it's really nice to win a medal. But for me, it's like, can I do better than I did last time? So if you throw a personal best, or you run a race and your time is better than you've ever done, that's kind of the goal, is to be better, to improve on your athleticism. I know as I got older, I'd be sprinting and I'd feel like, oh man, this is going to be a great time. I'm going to have a great time on this race. And it's like a lot slower, even though it feels like it's faster, but your body doesn't always maintain what you think it does.
Sure.
So it's at this point, it's almost like I want to try to maintain where I used to be and not get any slower or throw any less. I'm kind of done with personal best marks, I think.
Sure.
But it's always good to try for that, you know. I think emotionally, I want to keep going for as long as possible, but physically, it gets more and more difficult, at least for me. I've had 3 knee surgeries on each knee.
Wow.
And I need to get a knee replacement. I've had, you know, for years I've had people say, oh, you need a knee replacement. So I think I'm going to finally do that, which will, I'm sure, help push me towards retirement.
Let's say you actually do retire, which I don't believe. What are you going to do next?
Good question.
I mean, every sport needs spectators.
Oh, yeah.
The San Francisco Track and Field Club is celebrating 40 years. And if you're thinking about joining, you can find them online at sftrackandfield.com.
I think one of the things I really enjoy about this club that keeps me involved with the team is the fact that in and out, people come and people go, but there's always a group of people that you really want to stay in touch with and have as friends and family.
The 14th annual Pride Meet is happening at San Francisco State University on Saturday, June 18th. I'll be there doing the in-stadium announcements. Please come say hi. More info at the web post for this week's Out in the Bay at outinthebay.org. Up next on Out in the Bay, you've heard the pronoun they become pretty widespread as of late. A lot of people use it. And that prominence has become, well, more obvious in the last decade or so. And reporter Lisanne Mendel wanted to know why.
I'm Lisanne Mendel. I started using they pronouns 6 years ago. Which is interesting, because 8 years ago, I didn't know that using they was a thing we could do. And I live in San Francisco. I was at all the gender spectrum support groups. But today, I can't go to a party or a Zoom meeting without seeing another gentle them. I'm watching the Winter Olympics, and one of the American figure skaters, Timothy LeDuc, openly uses they pronouns.
know it's been quite a journey to not only be here, but to be here authentically. Timothy told us they're excited to be the first non-binary Winter Olympian, but more importantly, they hope their presence can show that queer people don't have to alter themselves to have success in Olympic sports.
In 2019, they was Merriam-Webster's Word of the Year. In 2019 is also the year that the Trevor Project found that 20% of queer youth use they pronouns. A year later, the Pew Research Center reported that 1 in 4 American adults know someone who goes by they. That's a lot of people, but that's not even the most interesting part. What's interesting, what's remarkable, is that 10 years ago, those surveys didn't mention singular they at all. So what happened?
I'm Lal Zimmern. My pronouns are he or they, and I'm an associate professor of linguistics at UC Santa Barbara. The change that we're seeing already with singular they is incredibly rapid. That's remarkable in itself.
I asked Dr. Zimmern why this change is happening so fast.
One factor would be the social change that's happening fast. The emergence of non-binary as a category is itself pretty recent.
You see, back in the 90s, the term non-binary was used by researchers, but the rest of us and the media still talked about two genders, man, woman, trans man, trans woman. If you were different, well, maybe you were in between and not finished yet. Then we started using non-binary, and it clicked. Non-binary is everywhere, on social media platforms, in the dictionary, even the legal system.
X marks the spot. That's the case for non-binary residents of Oregon, meaning they no longer need to specify whether they're male or female at the DMV. They can just mark X.
That was from 2017. Oregon was the first state to allow a non-binary marker on IDs. Today, 40 states allow it, as well as the federal government. Any citizen can select a non-binary X on their U.S. passport, regardless of what's on their state ID. Did you catch my use of singular they just now? Any citizen can do a thing on their passport, regardless of what's on their state ID. That gets us to the second factor in why the growth in singular they is so rapid.
There's also a grammatical piece to it, which is that there's a lot of strong linguistic evidence that singular they was already undergoing significant changes that made it more available for non-binary people to use. Often when people are talking about a generic person, they'll use they, them pronouns, no matter the gender of the person that they're imagining.
Here are two prestigious examples.
If anyone tells you that America's best days are behind her, they're looking the wrong way.
Former President George Bush could have said he or she is looking the wrong way. But that's so clunky. Plus, gender is a spectrum. Duh. Here's a more recent example.
Everyone is entitled to be treated with respect, to have their voice heard, and to have their government listen.
Today, a lot of people are saying they. And it's not a new thing. At least not according to the Oxford English Dictionary. That's the OED if you're a PhD.
The OED has examples going back to Chaucer. Basically, as long as English has been written, singular they has been part of the language.
Chaucer wrote the Canterbury Tales in the 1380s. That's the first major written work of English. In it, Chaucer used singular they like a former president would, to refer to a generic, hypothetical person. What's new with singular they right now is that
sometimes people will even use it in sentences that have gender in them. I've been collecting examples of this for quite a while, and there are some good ones like, I wouldn't have a boyfriend unless they were really good to me. I wouldn't have a boyfriend unless they were really good to me. Or this mother has not accepted that their child is queer. We're marking gender very clearly, and yet there's something grammatical about that that makes it sound better to say they. And part of this progression and change has been that it's not just a generic person, but can even be a specific person. Like, this mother has not accepted that their child is queer. And that's relatively new. Singular they has been around for hundreds of years in English, but that way of using singular they seems to be a new phenomenon. And so that grammatical shift made room for they, them to become the primary pronoun that non-binary people use.
So that's why the changes in singular they are so rapid and so remarkable right now. Non-binary gender is on the rise at the same time that English is becoming more gender neutral. The linguistic and social changes are feeding back into each other like a perfect storm. Which brings me to a third option I haven't mentioned yet, the generic he. If you took an English class in the 60s, you might have learned to construct sentences like, everyone did as he pleased. How did we get there from, say, 1823, when Lord Byron wrote, everyone must judge according to their own feelings?
There was actually a really important thing that did happen in the 1800s, though, which was that British Parliament enacted a rule that said that when you're referring to a generic person, you should use he and not they or he or she. And the reason they gave for that is that men are better than women. It was a very explicit, intentional move to say, do not include women, do not use gender neutral terms. If you're talking about a citizen, that's a he. The idea that pronouns are political, like the erasure of they, was totally political, openly misogynistic.
I'm Lucene Mendel. If you want to take ye olde politics out of English, call me they.
Just said, I don't know what pronouns are, and I won't learn, cause learning's hard. Instead, I'll regurgitate a half-baked, stolen opinion.
Special thanks to Dr. Lyle Zimmern, Eric Jansen, Anna Walters, and Berkeley AMI. This piece was reported and produced by me, Lucene Mendel.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio. I'm Christopher Beale. You can catch up on past episodes, get in touch, and sign up for our email newsletter at outinthebay.org. That's also where you can make a tax-deductible donation, outinthebay.org. Your donation helps us keep bringing queer air to your ears. Out in the Bay is a nonprofit, independent production, which means we don't get any financial support from the radio stations that air Out in the Bay every week, not from NPR, not from podcast platforms, only from listener support. Thanks to Brad Payton and Richard Merck of Silicon Valley and Cornelia Enders of San Francisco for your generous support. Thanks also to KALW 91.7 FM in the San Francisco Bay Area and San Francisco Public Press and its radio station KSFP 102.5 FM for broadcasting Out in the Bay every week. You can also listen to the show at outinthebay.org. Our email address is outinthebay@yahoo.com. That's outinthebay@yahoo.com. If you have an idea for an episode of Out in the Bay, send it to that email address or reach out to me directly on social media. I'm at Real Chris J. Beale. The executive producer of Out in the Bay is Eric Jansen. This episode was produced by me and Andrew Sterner. The piece on the singular they pronoun was by reporter Lucene Mendel. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. Thanks for checking in. I'm Christopher Beale, and I'll see you next week out in the Bay.
Happy Pride Month. Out in the Bay Queer Radio is part of Give Out Day, a June fundraiser for LGBTQ nonprofits. Donations help Out in the Bay broadcast queer voices to San Francisco and beyond. Giving via Give Out Day helps Out in the Bay qualify for bonuses based on the number of donors. $10 can make a difference. More info at giveoutday.org/outinthebay. That's giveoutday.org/outinthebay. Thank you.